So a couple of months ago, I was traveling to Orlando, Florida, to give a speech. And I remember I came in the airplane, I came in, I found my seat, and I sat down next to a woman who I would describe as a business executive. She looked the part. She was wearing a great business suit. She was in business mode. She had her laptop open before we even took off. She was definitely working. I, on the other hand, I was wearing shorts, a t-shirt, and flip-flops. I probably looked like I was headed to the beach or to, I don't know, Disney World. And I sat down and she started the conversation, probably the way that most people start the conversation in that situation. She said, "Are you headed to Orlando for business or pleasure?" And I said, "I'm headed for business. How about for you?" And she said, "For business." And then she said, "What do you do?" And I said, "I'm a keynote speaker. I'm speaking at an association conference tomorrow." And then she kind of looked me from head to toe and she asked me a very blunt question. She said, "Why in the world would anyone hire you to speak to them?" I was kind of offended for a minute, and I looked at her and I said, "'Cause I'm amazing?" And she just laughed, and we had a great conversation, and I'm actually speaking for her company soon. The reason I tell you that story is we begin our conversation this morning. I want to start with a really blunt question for you. Why in the world would anyone choose to do business with you? I want you to think about that for a minute. With all the advisors out there, with so many options, if I as a consumer look at it, why would I choose you? Why do you stand out? What makes you different? What makes you compelling? What makes you influential? Now, if we were to step out of that story for just a minute, I think it's a pertinent question, but I also want you to see that as an example of using a story to make a point. And this morning, we're going to talk about storytelling and how you, as advisors, can use stories to be a little bit more influential, to make a better connection. Why do stories work? I want to have a little bit of conversation about this. Why are stories effective? As advisors, why would you use stories? Yeah?
You usually feel something, it becomes emotional, and people can feel your passion.
Yeah, it becomes emotional. Now, let's think about this for just a minute. People buy based on what? They really buy based on emotion, right? We justify with logic. Like, I don't know if you guys have a wife like my wife, where she will try and justify how much money she saved me after shopping. Like, oh my goodness, you wouldn't even believe how much money I saved. And I still can't get it through to her that if she just doesn't spend, like, I don't know. Anyway, that's a different story. But so people buy based on emotion, right? People take action based on emotion. People make decisions based on emotion. So if we can be emotional in our conversation, we can move people. That's what influence is, right? At the end of the day, I find it amazing that so many experts talk about how we have to communicate logically to emotional beings. But there has to be that emotional connection. I think that's huge. Why else do stories work? What do stories do for people? They simplify, don't they? Sometimes you guys explain a lot of concepts that are very hard to understand. And you could explain them with terms that most people have never heard of before. You could make it so that people have no idea what you're talking about very easily. But great communicators simplify. They make the complex really simple and understandable and tangible, and stories make it relevant and we can hold on to it. Great. So they simplify. What else do they do?
Stories are authentic.
Yeah.
It always resonates.
Yeah. They're real and they share a part of us. And in a lot of ways, it allows us to be vulnerable and to be authentic and transparent. And people want to connect to you. They really do. Now, here's the thing. They want you to be credible and to know what you're doing, but they also want to connect with who you are. And they want to feel like, I like this guy. I could work with her. She's somebody that I resonate with. Stories move people. Now, go ahead. Did you have a thought? Okay, if you couldn't hear down here, he said people, there's an entertainment value of stories, right? People want to be entertained. We need to engage them. We need to keep them captivated. We want them to go, yes, I want to be part of this. And so stories work. Stories move people. Now, how many of you would agree with this statement that in business, your ability to communicate will make you or break you? Would you agree with that? Okay, I think that's totally true. As you think about that, I want you to watch this. Hold on just a sec. We're going to start over. We had audio. Anybody know what happened to my audio? Yep.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Okay. Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map. Why do you think this is?
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. Or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future for our children.
Thank you very much, South Carolina.
First off, Mario Lopez deserves a Grammy for like holding a straight face there. I mean, thank you very much. That's unbelievable. And you watch that and you can't really laugh. Like you kind of want to cry. It's painful. I mean, you really, and here's why I show you that. Every one of us have had our Miss South Carolina moments, haven't we? Where you're like, what the crap did I just say? Like that didn't even make sense to me and I said it, you know? I mean, we all do that. And the amazing thing is, in the people business, we want to connect every time. We want our communication to just come across and to work. And I can tell you from my experience, it just isn't always that way. It's interesting being here speaking at BYU. I don't get this opportunity very often, but this just down the road, for me, is where I feel like, in a lot of ways, my life changed. In August of 2003, I got married. And my wife and I moved into a little apartment just down the road here, not very far. We were both going to school here. And I had started a business about 11 months earlier with my brother. And this was our main source of income. We were doing it on the side. I was studying entrepreneurship here at BYU, so I figured you needed to start a business. I thought that's what the program was all about. And so we started to get this business going. And that month that I got married in particular stood out to me, not just because I got married, but we moved into this little one-bedroom apartment, just this dinky, you know, newlywed apartment. I think the rent was $600 in that apartment. We shared one car between the two of us. We were both going to school. We had a normal cost of tuition and books and things. And I remember just days after we moved in, right after we got off our honeymoon, my brother called me and he said, "Ty, I transferred some money into your account." I said, "Great, thank you." And he said, "Just so you know, we only made $800 this month, so I transferred $400 to you." Now, we'd had better months than that, but this month was unique because this was the first time I was going to have to be accountable to somebody else. You know what I mean? Like I was going to have to explain this to my new bride. "Hey, look at me. You know, I made $400. You might regret your choice now." I don't know, but I was so nervous about it. And I remember sitting down with Sarah and telling her, "Look, we only made $400. This was our only source of income." And she had a natural reaction, like, "Are we going to be okay?" You know, and we had some savings and things. We were going to be okay. But as we started talking through it, the truth is I was working hard. I was talking to people. I was just struggling to get people to take me seriously, to get people to buy into me, to get people to do business with me. I wasn't very influential in the process. And as we talked through it, Sarah asked me two questions that really changed things for me. She said, "Okay, just, I know you're not, it's not working the way that you want, but if you were to step back, when you started this business, you had great aspirations. Do you still believe in it? Do you still see it as something that you can be successful with?" And, you know, you think about all of you in this room, as you're out talking to people, there's times that you feel like it's not working, that you're not having the success that you want. Step back and look at it with fresh eyes and go, "Okay, do I really think that this has potential?" For me, I said, "Yes, I think it does." And then she asked me a question that truly changed things for me. She said, "So to get from where you are to where you want to be, what needs to change?" I don't know about you, but I would rather everything else change. You know, I was like, if I could just find other people, I mean, if we had, but the only thing in the world that needed to change was me. I was struggling to connect with people. I was struggling in that communication process. And so I made a resolve that day that I was going to work on my communication and work to perfect it in a way that I had really never pursued anything in my life. And so I started to read books about communication. I started to study great salespeople and great speakers, and I started to go to seminars, and I started to record myself. Have you guys ever done that? Have you ever recorded yourself? Is that not the worst experience of your life? When you listen to that, first time I ever listened to it, I was like, who is that? Like, didn't even sound like me. I don't think it's fair, because in my head, my voice sounds so much deeper than what you hear. Like, I don't get why that is. I don't understand it. But then I listened to the first time I sat down in front of somebody. I'm giving a sales pitch. I said 72 times. No joke. 72 times. And I'm going, what am I selling? They probably don't have a clue what I'm selling. And I sat back and I looked at it, and it was blatantly obvious to me why I was struggling. And so I started to work on it, and I started to record myself. If you get nothing else out of this, do yourself a favor. If you have an iPhone or any smartphone, basically, there's a little app on there. You can record yourself. Next time you sit down with somebody, just hit record. Go back and listen to it later. Ask, would I buy from me? My answer was, no, there's no way I would buy from me. Like, I was like, I don't think anybody would. And so I started to get better at it. And long story short, we were able to make a change and grow that business. We grew that business to over $25 million in annual revenue while still in our 20s. And in the process of that, we built a large sales team, and I did a lot of speaking and training for our sales team, and I found a passion in this. I love speaking. I love doing this. I was talking to my wife as I was leaving this morning. It's fun to kind of drive down here instead of flying somewhere to give a speech. And I said to my wife, I said, would you have ever imagined in your wildest dreams that I'd be able to do this? I mean, to be able to come and speak is so fun to me. And my wife's kind of funny. She got a little smile on her face, and she goes, Ty, in my wildest dreams, you don't even show up. Glad you find that funny. Kind of scares me, to be honest. I don't know. I travel quite a bit, and I'm not sure how to take that. I'm just kidding. My wife's amazing. She's a great support. Like, the other day, I was helping a friend move a couch, and she goes, don't worry, Ty's stronger than he looks. Like, things like that. I hope you have somebody like that in your life. It's important. So we built that business, my brother and I. Ended up selling my half of the business to my brother Scott, and I started speaking and training business, and I've written 3 books. I wrote a book called The Power of Influence, which was my first book, and then I wrote a book called The Power of Storytelling, because I had some people ask me to coach them on speaking and presenting, and it caused me to dissect the storytelling process of what I was using, what I had developed, and what I had started to use for myself, and to be able to teach it, because it's another level to be able to teach something. And as I looked at different books out there on storytelling, the truth is there are a lot of books out there that talk about how storytelling is great, which I agree, storytelling is great. But nobody broke it down, like as a skill set. How do you craft a story? How do you make the characters come alive? Where do you use dialogue and narration? And I mean, all of the little details that make a story work. And so that's what this book really is. And now I get a chance to speak to a lot of financial advisors and a lot of salespeople on storytelling. I want to break down storytelling into 3 parts as we go through this. And we're going to move through some great ideas pretty quickly. If you're interested, you can get a copy of the book later. But I break storytelling down into the mindset, the skill set, and the tool set of storytelling. The mindset is the approach, how we approach the conversation, the presentation when you're sitting in front of a potential client. The skill set is literally how you craft and develop a story. And the tool set are how do you make a story come alive? How do you make it so that it connects, so it's compelling and dynamic and memorable? And so as we walk through this, I'll help you to understand each of these sections, each of these ideas. We're just down the road here from Sandra Covey's home, Stephen Covey, who passed away a few years ago, his home. And Stephen Covey was an amazing mentor of mine. How many of you have ever read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People? Okay, great book. I mean, just as good as it gets. Named as the number one business book of the 21st century. Stephen, the first time I ever met Stephen Covey was in 2006. It was at his home just up the road here. And he was hosting an event. It was a political event. And I was invited by a mutual friend, and I was there mostly to meet Stephen Covey. I was excited about meeting Stephen Covey. And so my friend grabbed me at one point, brought me over to Stephen Covey, and he said, Stephen, this is Ty Bennett. Ty's writing a book. And Stephen was very gracious. He said, welcome, glad you're here. And we talked a little bit, and he said, Ty, what's the title of your book? And I said, it's called The Power of Influence. It was my first book. And he goes, I like that. That's a good title. He goes, can I give you some advice? This is Stephen Covey. I was like, yes. Can I write it down? Can I record it? Like anything. His book sold 30 million copies, right? And this is what he said. He said, Ty, make sure you write the book for the reader, not the writer. I said, what do you mean by that? He goes, you know, a book that's written for the writer to build themselves up for their own ego, it just doesn't have that big of an impact. But a book that's written for the reader to teach, to inspire, to help somebody, that book will be a home run. And then it's like he got this train of thought going, and he just kept going. He goes, Ty, you know, I'm a lot older than you. At that time, he was in his late 60s. He said, as you go through life, I think most of us go through life and we think life is about achievement, right? What's the next goal I can achieve? What's the next step? What's the next level that I'm going to reach? He said, but somewhere, maybe it's with age, somewhere you go through life and you figure out that life is actually about contribution. It's about what can I give? How can I serve? That was my very first meeting with Stephen Covey, and it was life-changing. The man was amazing. But what he taught me was truly the mindset of an influencer. What he was saying is that when you want to influence somebody, your focus has to be on the audience, right? Think about it. As a writer, you write the book for the reader, not the writer. As a salesperson, it's about your customer. If you're a teacher, it's about your students. If you're a leader, it's about your people. If you're a speaker, it's about your audience. Your focus is always on them. It has to be on them. And when you focus on them, a few things change. One, I think we go into most presentations with the wrong goal. I want you to think about this. Anytime you're going to go sit down, you're going to go sit down in front of a couple, or you've got a group presentation, or however you grow your business. When you go to give a presentation, think about what goal is going through your mind. I would bet that your goal is perfection, isn't it? Right? We want it to be perfect. We want to knock it out of the park. We want to remember all of our points. We want to make sure that we connect. We want to make sure that we're persuasive. We want it to be perfect. Here's my question. Have you ever given or seen a perfect presentation? They don't exist. They just don't. I speak about 100 times a year. My assistant Jill knows my schedule better than I know my schedule. So when I'm on stage, I will get a text from her that says, how did it go? Because she knows my phone won't be on. And when I get off stage, I'll have a text that say, how did it go? And sometimes it feels amazing. So I'll text back, you know, it was a home run. It was awesome. Knocked it out of the park. Great audience. And then a lot of these, we get video back of these presentations. So a couple weeks later, I'll watch the video and I'll go, that is not the same presentation I remember. Like, when I watch it technically, I screw up the same way everybody screws up. I don't finish sentences. I stumble over words. I say things that don't make sense. All the things that everybody does. But why did it feel so good? And here's the thing that I've realized. Is we need to shift our goal. Our goal should not be perfection. Our goal should be connection with the audience. Because think about it. When you connect with that person sitting across from you, all those imperfections don't matter, do they? If you listen to the recording of how you sell your services, there are times that you're like, how the heck did they buy that? I didn't even explain it right. It didn't make any sense. But you make a connection, and somehow they push through that, right? If we focus on them, if we truly focus on them and we connect in some way, that's what makes it influential. And so if our focus is on the audience and our goal isn't perfection, it's connection, then what's our purpose? Our purpose is simply to engage. What does it mean to engage? What does that word mean? I want you to think about it. What does it mean to engage? When you're presenting to somebody, what does engagement mean to you? They're present. They're focused. They're not thinking about something else. They're not on their phone looking at, you know, email. They're totally present. Okay, great. What else does it mean? Plugged into you. Okay.
I was gonna say a connection of the hearts.
A connection of the hearts, right? There's some type of emotional connection they're involved. Because think about it. If there's not engagement, there will never be any influence. I don't know if you've ever done this. I'm sure you guys have never done this, but I will admit that I've done this. As a young salesperson, I would be so excited about giving a presentation. I would just be all prepared. I'd have my slides ready. I'd be ready to go. And I would sit down with people, and I would just go on and on and on and on. And I'd take a deep breath, and I keep going and go. And at the end of it, I'd sit go, do you have any questions? And they go, no, I think you covered it. And those people never did business with me, right? Because what I was really good at was giving presentations, and what I wasn't good at was having conversations. Think about it, a presentation is a monologue. It's one person talking. And nobody wants to be talked at, they want to be talked with. But a conversation is a dialogue. There's back and forth, there's connection, there's engagement, there's discussion, there's connection of the hearts, there's an emotional tie. And unless we engage people, we will never influence them. Unless they're truly present and engaged and focused and plugged into you, those people will not do business with you. And so we have to learn how to engage. We have to learn how to ask great questions. We have to learn how to dive deeper and make it entertaining and conversational and to move the conversation forward. So if we focus on the audience and we learn how to engage them, I think a lot of this hangs on this really delicate balance. There's a balance between credibility and relatability. Credibility on one side, think about this. If people don't view you as credible, they will not care what you have to say. But on the other side, if people don't view you as relatable, they will not respond. I remember struggling to get our business off the ground and struggling to get people to just respond to me. And I remember reading all these books. People would talk about the golden rule of business. You probably heard the golden rule of business before. The golden rule of business says people do business with people they know, like, and trust. You've heard that before? I was having great conversations with people. They seemed to like me, they seemed to know me, they seemed to trust me. There was good interaction, but they weren't doing business with me. And I was like, that's not true. What am I missing? Like, I don't get it. And I remember talking to a mentor about this. And I remember saying, look, I don't know what it is. Like, truly, we have great conversations. They like having me around. It's not like we're not connecting in some way, but they're not doing business with me. And he said, Ty, what value do you bring? I said, what do you mean? He said, value always precedes influence. What value are you bringing to them? And what he was really saying is the golden rule of business should be people do business with people they know, like, trust, and value. Right? That's what people do. That's credibility, that value, and relatability on the other side, and the know, like, and trust factor. And finding that balance is important. And I don't know what it was. I was struggling to do it. So I said to this mentor, I said, okay, well, what do I do? I'm failing at this. I'll do anything. Just give me some advice. Tell me what to do. And he goes, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go and talk to the last five people who told you no, and I want you to ask them why. And I was like, I will do anything but that, like anything else that you have in mind. And he goes, just have a real conversation, like just approach it humble and just say, tell me the truth, like help me learn. Have you ever done that before? I went and had a conversation with these five people, and to me it was eye-opening, it was amazing. They were honest with me, they just told me the truth. And here's the thing, they told me lots of things, but all five of them said, Ty, it's your age. You're 21, you probably look like you're 12. Some of you are like, you still do. But I'm 34, so back off. I'll be honest, I had never thought that my age was a problem, ever. I was just young enough and cocky enough that I just didn't even realize it was an issue. And sitting down in front of somebody who was older and wiser and more experienced than me, they're sitting there thinking, what does this kid have that I need? And so I went back to this mentor and I go, it's my age. And he goes, I know. I'm like, if you knew, why didn't you tell me? And he's like, because you had to hear it. And I go, what do I do? And he goes, I don't know. And I'm like, what kind of mentor are you? Like, really? And he goes, I was like, I'm not going to wait till I'm 40 to start in business. What do I do? And he goes, I don't know. What did other young entrepreneurs do? What did Bill Gates do? What did Steve Jobs do? And as soon as he said Bill Gates, I had this idea. And it developed into a story that I used over and over and over again. And it was a story that I needed to lend credibility because, you see, when I would sit down with people, there was an elephant in the room. You know what that's like, right? And most of the time what we do with an elephant in the room, I mean, imagine for a minute an elephant literally on the stage right here, like a huge, massive elephant sitting on the stage. And what we typically do is we come over here and we're like, just don't worry about that. It's fine. Just look at me. Like, don't pay attention. And we don't even address it. And people can't get their eyes off of the elephant. And I wasn't even talking about it. And the whole time, they wouldn't listen to me. They're just thinking, this kid has no idea what he's talking about. And so I had to address it, and I had to approach it. So I developed this story that I would use when I sat down with people. John, can I use you as an example? Come on up here for a minute. So John, have a seat, my friend. John, your entire involvement in this exercise is to just sit there. You're doing good. Good job. Awesome. Okay. So I would sit down with people like John, more experienced, more successful than me, older than me, and I would say, John, I kind of feel like a young Bill Gates. And they'd typically laugh or respond, and that's what I want. I wanted it to be shocking. Shock is a great engagement tool. I wanted his attention. I go, John, here's what I mean. If you remember, Bill Gates was 19 when he dropped out of school, right? And at the time, computers were huge. They were the size of refrigerators. They were super expensive. And Bill Gates told everyone he was going to put a personal computer in every home in the world. I mean, people probably thought he was nuts. Who is this young, naive entrepreneur, no idea what he's talking about, right? Here's the thing, John. I'm not saying I'm going to be as rich as Bill Gates is. And I'm not saying I'm going to change the world the same way Bill Gates has. But I do know I have something, and I'm going to do great things with it. I just want you to take a serious look at it. Is that fair? Okay, that little story, thank you very much, John, that story told thousands and thousands of times, quite literally made me millions of dollars. Because it caused people to get over this hurdle that they had. And it opened the door for them to see me as credible and say, okay, I can move that forward. That story changed my business completely. And so when you think about the approach of how we approach the conversation, the presentation, when you're sitting down with somebody, I want you to remember the focus is on the audience. It is about them. It's not about you. It has to be about them. Think about it. If they don't do business with you, you have no business, right? It has to be about them. As an influencer, it's always about them. And so we need to focus not on having a perfect presentation, but on making a connection with the person we're sitting in front of or with the group that we're presenting to. If we can do that, then our purpose is to engage them, to grab a hold of their attention, to make them part, to get them to plug into us, to have an emotional connection. And that hinges on a balance between credibility and relatability, in that each of us have to find our voice in a way that we can connect with people. Now, as we're going through this, I notice a lot of you are taking notes. If you're interested in getting a copy of the slides and notes that I'm using for this presentation, just text the word storytelling to the number 96,000. I realize 96,000 is not a full number, but if you just put that number in, storytelling in the subject, hit send, you'll get a link back that you can download the notes and the slides for my presentation. That way you have everything that we're talking about and we can go through it. Okay, I want to talk about stories. And here's my definition of a story. A story is a reimagined experience narrated with enough detail and feeling to cause your listener's imagination to experience it as real. Think about it. It is about them. It's about them feeling it, experiencing it, having an emotional experience with it, relating to it. Because if they can feel it and experience it, they're more likely to act on it. Now, here's the foundation for influential storytelling. You don't retell a story, you relive a story. Because when you relive a story, you invite people in and you allow them to relive it with you. And when they feel it, they will adopt it. When they feel it, they will act on it. When they relate to it and it becomes emotional to them, they'll start to move with it. Okay, so there's lots of ways that you can relive a story. I want to give you some techniques on how you do this, because one of the ways that you can do this is you want to make sure you bring the audience into the story. So if I want John to relive this story with me, I want to make sure that he's in it, he's feeling it, he's experiencing it, and there's a couple of techniques you can use. Now, here's the thing. Everybody in here tells different stories. You may tell certain stories about your own experience or a certain client story that you use over and over again. Everybody in here tells stories. You do not have to change the story you're telling in any way, but if you simply add these techniques, it will be a completely different experience for the person hearing it. They will feel it in a different way. Okay, so the first technique is to simply place them in the scene. This is done by doing something like saying, if you had been there, when? Now, what happens when I do that? If you had been sitting in my office with me, the first time I ever had to interview somebody, I was so nervous. My knees were shaking under my desk, right? What happens? When I place you in that scene, you start to picture it. You literally start to create it around you. We are visual learners. As human beings, we see things in pictures. And so if I can help you create that and see it, you're more likely to experience it. Another way you can do that is to use the word imagine. Imagine is a great storytelling word. It engages both sides of the brains. I can say, imagine being here, right? And if I put you in that situation, you start to experience it and start to feel it. So that's the first technique, is simply place them in the scene. Let them experience it. Let them create it, see it visually. The second is to create curiosity. Now, I have to tell you a hard truth. I hate to do it, but here's the truth. Nobody cares about your story. Not even your mom. Like, nobody in the world cares about your story unless they see how it pertains to them. That's just how we operate. That's just how our minds work. So if I were to just start off and say, let me tell you my story, whether it's conscious or subconscious, most people are going, eh, I don't care. Why should I care? What does it have to do with me? And so if we fail to create curiosity on the front end of a story to see why it pertains to them, they're less engaged. So the way that you do this, the technique is that you ask a you-focused question on the front end of the story. And a you-focused question means the word you is in the question. So I would say, I would ask a question. For example, before I jumped into the Stephen Covey story, I said, how many of you have ever read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People? Virtually every hand in here went up. That creates a commonality to where there's relevance for the story to make sense in your life as well. The technique is that you tap into their world with a question and you bring them into your world with a story. So let's say I was gonna tell you a story about, I don't know, goal setting. And I could just start by saying, you know, when I was 21, I set a really big goal. And most of you don't really care, and that's understandable. But I could ask a question like, I want you to think about goals for a minute. What stops you from achieving your goals? Think about that. What stops you from achieving your goals? What do you think?
Energy.
Sometimes it's just, you know, building up the energy to really go after something, right? Okay, what stops you from achieving your goals?
Lack of focus.
We get distracted, right? I mean, how many of you can relate to that? I know I can. I mean, at 21, I was distracted by everything, right? Mostly girls, but, you know, lots of things. And it's interesting, because when I was 21, I set a really big goal. Now you would actually care about that story, because that simple question and engagement created a conversation to where we're talking about something that we share in common. Does that make sense? There's some people who can just jump into stories and they're like, it was a cold November night. Like, I don't know, that feels awkward to me. It just feels weird, but it feels very easy to start a conversation, to ask a question, and then to bring them into my world with a story. So every time you start into a story, if you're engaging, if you're conversational, if you're making it so that you're having a true conversation, you ask that you-focused question. The third technique is that you reinforce relatability. You reinforce relatability throughout by saying things like, do you know what I mean? Has that ever happened to you? Wow, what would that feel like? Have you ever met somebody like that? God, what would you do in that situation? Do you see what I'm doing in that? As we're having a story, as I'm telling a story, I'm in essence stepping out of the story going, are you with me? Do you get this? Does this make sense? Do you see how it applies to you? But I'm doing it in just a very conversational way. How many of you give group presentations, not just one-on-one? Okay, here's the interesting thing. If you learn how to be conversational, to reinforce relatability in the way that you speak, I honestly do not speak differently to one person or to 1,000 people. I speak to large audiences at all of the time. If you're conversational, it sounds the same. Why? Because I want to have a one-on-one conversation with everybody in the room. I want them to feel engaged. And so you can simply say things like, wow, what would you do in that situation? And sometimes they're going to respond to that. Sometimes it's just to get them thinking, just to keep them engaged. Do you know what I mean? Wow, what would you do with that? And there's times that you can make it even more specific, even more applicable to the person you're talking to. You can reinforce relatability in a personal way. I'll give you an example. A few weeks ago, I was speaking to a group of network marketers. If you haven't been involved in network marketing, you don't know what that is. These are entrepreneurs, and they're involved in a little different business model, and they view themselves as entrepreneurs. They're risk takers. They pride themselves on thinking differently than most people. So I'm telling this story about a man named Mel Fisher. Mel Fisher is the greatest treasure hunter the world's ever known. Mel Fisher discovered the treasure of the Atocha off the Florida Keys. It's worth about $400 million. Before you go looking for treasure, he searched the ocean floor every day for 18 years to find that treasure. I mean, he lost 5 divers in the process. It was a crazy, amazing story of persistence. So I'm telling this story, and there's part of the story where I say Mel and his wife Dio made a decision. They closed their shop, they picked up their family, they moved from California across the country to Florida, and decided to search for treasure full time. Now, I've told that story in a lot of settings, mostly to sales groups, and most of the time people are like, what? Like, they kind of react like, that's crazy. As I was telling this story a couple weeks ago to this group of network marketers, there's this lady in the front row, and she goes, yeah. And I was like, what? Why'd she but like, she resonated with that. Like, the risk-taking, just, that's who they are. And so I kind of stopped, and I went, now, most people would think that's crazy, but all of you are in network marketing, so you're like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I got this huge laugh, huge engagement. Why? Because I'm saying, you are Mel Fisher. You are this story. Do you get it? Do you relate to it? Are you feeling it? Like, that's what I'm saying. And you just do that by having this conversational tone in the way that you speak. So if you take a story that you're telling and you apply these three techniques, before you start, you ask a you focus question so that there's a reason for them to hear and listen to it. And then you place them in the scene. Somewhere you say, if you had been here, or imagine this situation. And then throughout the story, you reinforce relatability. I promise you, that story will be felt and heard differently than if you told it without those techniques. It will bring the audience in, and they'll experience it. That's what makes it influential. Now, as you think about how you craft a story, this is where you want to take really good notes. Okay? There's three parts to a story. There's the beginning, there's the middle, and then wait for it, there's the end. Okay? No, but truly, I call that the setup, the struggle, and the solution. There's a rule in storytelling that's this. If it's not necessary to say, it becomes necessary not to say. The more concise you are, the more compelling it becomes. What we are really good at doing is taking a 2-minute story and telling it in 5 minutes. And we kill it. Like, not in a good way. We kill the story. Nobody wants to hear it anymore. What we need to do is we need to condense it. We need to get rid of all of the extra fluff and all the unnecessary details and information. Jerry Seinfeld was once interviewed, and he said he will spend hours upon hours trying to cut a 6-word joke down to 5 words. Why would he do that? Because in comedy, the quicker you get from the setup to the punchline, the bigger the laugh. Well, in storytelling, the quicker you get from the setup to the solution, the more impactful it is. Okay, you want to be able to get rid of all that unnecessary information. I'll tell you where we typically put details in that don't need to be there. We usually do that in the setup. Let's say you're going to tell a client story, but let's say it's not even your client story. Let's say you work in a firm where there's other advisors, and you hear this great story of some success one of the other advisors had with a client. That's a great story you can use, and you should use those stories. But you shouldn't tell it like this, because what we often do is we say, so there's a guy that we work with. Well, I don't personally work with him, but this other guy that I work with in the firm, his name's John, he works with him, maybe it was 2 years ago. Like, who cares? Nobody cares. Just say one of my clients and move on. Like, that's all you need to do to take ownership of the story. We lose people in that. But the true essence of what makes a story influential is a story is struggle to solution. Struggle to solution. Here's how it works. You hook people with the struggle. You help people with the solution. There is something about struggle, conflict, trial that is emotional and engaging to us as human beings. I want you to think about the news for a minute. You may hate the news, you may love the news, it doesn't really matter, but the news is all about conflict. The news is sharing crazy headlines and catastrophe and things that are happening. Here's my question. Why is it that the news is that way? Because that's what we buy. That's why. We respond to it. I just think they're smart enough that if we wanted something different and we bought something different, they would sell us something different. That's just not the case. We respond to struggle and conflict, and what we don't often do in storytelling, especially in business, I want you to think about this. In business, for some reason, we believe that we need to come from a power position. When you sit down in front of clients, all you want to do is talk about, I'm great, and we're great, and if you work with us, it'll be great. And they're usually like, great, see you later. Because there's nothing engaging about it. There's nothing emotional about it. Think about it as a movie. If you and I were to go to a movie, we just go down the street here, we go to a movie this afternoon. You sit down, you have your drink in one hand, your popcorn in the other, you're getting ready for the movie. Do you see how I just placed you in the scene as a side note? Okay, so as you're watching the movie, it's about a guy who just merrily skips through life. No ups, no downs, just perfect. Everything works out great. This, the Midas touch, fantastic. we would all leave and go, that was the stupidest movie I've ever seen in my life. Really, like, what's engaging about that? There's no struggle. There's nothing I can relate to. There's nothing real about it. Here's where this became very clear to me. My three-year-old son at the time taught me this. My kids love me to tell them stories at night. I have four kids, 9 down to 2. And a couple of years ago, my boys were really into Smurf stories. I don't know if you know what Smurfs are. Smurfs are little blue people. They're like this big. Basic premise of Smurfs, they all live in a forest. There's a bad guy named Gargamel who has a cat. They almost catch the Smurfs, and somehow the Smurfs escape. Like, that's every Smurf episode you could ever have. And so after like a month, literally, of making up Smurf stories every night, I was just done. Like, I wanted nothing to do with Smurf stories anymore. I was tired one night, and my son Tanner is like, just one more Smurf story, just one more. And so I just told him this quick Smurf story. I don't even know what I said. It was just as quick as I could possibly make it. And my three-year-old goes, that's not a story. There's no bad guy. And I'm like, what? And he goes, there's no bad guy. That wasn't a story. That doesn't count. And I'm all, you're right. Like, that was a horrible story. I didn't even put a struggle in there. I mean, think about it. That's what we do in business all the time. We just want to share this, here's my success story. Here's how great we are. But if we were real, if we were authentic, if we were a little bit vulnerable, think about it. Vulnerability is not a weakness. It is a strength. If we can want to connect to people, we need to share who we are. Now, here's the thing. This is struggle to solution. I'm not saying that we want to hear that your life sucks. We want to hear that it did suck and now it's amazing. We want to see the contrast in that transition. Or with your clients, what the process that they've gone through, right? That's what makes a story work, is where were they, and then where did you take them? Where were they at struggling to, they had these goals but didn't know how to get there, and what were the strategies you put in place to help them achieve that, and what does it look like? That's what makes a story work. That's what makes a story truly influential. Because think about it, if you're sitting in front of somebody, if that prospect, if they can relate to the struggle or the pain that is happening in your story, they will beat down your door for the solution. Now, typically in a sales setting, the solution is going to be your services. The solution is going to be a product. The solution is going to be working with you. But you set it up in a way that it just connects and it resonates. If the struggle is relatable, then the solution becomes credible. Make sense? So as you walk through this, I want you to remember that a story is set up, struggle, solution. It's really simple. But the struggle needs to be there. You hook them with the struggle, you help them with the solution. Now, one more thought on storytelling is in terms of how you craft the story that you're telling. This is advice from Joseph Stalin. Okay, so if you think it's weird, I was hired by the Children's Hospital of Colorado to help them with their fundraising campaign. They want to raise $750 million. I mean, this is a huge campaign. And so they wanted me to help them craft and create the story that they were sharing and then train all of their staff and employees on how to share that story so they could have a successful campaign. So they sent me what they had. And the truth is they had really great information. They're amazing. They do incredible work. But their story was really high level. It was hard to emotionally connect with. It was huge numbers and huge amounts of what they do and the amount of kids that are affected by certain things. And so the first time I sat down with their board, I started by saying, I want to give you advice from Joseph Stalin. And they're probably like, oh, we hired the wrong guy. Like, I mean, this is a hospital that saves millions of kids' lives. This guy's a mass murderer. But what he said was this. He said, the death of one man is a tragedy. The death of a million is a statistic. Here's what I've seen you guys do way too often, is you use big numbers and huge statistics, which makes sense, but you don't make it emotionally connecting. I can't connect with trillions of dollars. I just can't. Emotionally, I can't connect there. I can't, you know, with the amount of people who retire at retirement age that don't have enough money in their bank account. Those numbers are huge. But if you tell me those statistics and then you tell me the story of one person that I can connect with, it changes the game. And so we have to go more personal. We have to be more specific. Tell me one story. Make it emotional. Make me connect with it. Make me engage, because that's what makes it influential. Now, I want to share with you a couple of tools before we wrap up here. And these tools are I call it a toolbox because when you start to tell a story, sometimes when you go into your toolbox, sometimes you need all of the tools. Sometimes you just need a screwdriver. Sometimes you just need a hammer. And that's how tools work, is some stories need all of them and some just need a few. And I don't have time to go into all of the tools, but I'll give you a couple of them, give you a couple of ideas. The first tool is characters. Outside of the struggle and outside of you as the storyteller, the characters are the most relevant, the most relatable piece of your story. And so we need the characters to come alive. Here's how I look at it. In this audience right here, I know that people learn three ways. There are people in here who learn visually, there are people who learn audibly, and there are people who learn kinesthetically, right? That's how everybody learns. So if I want my characters to connect with everyone here, I need my characters to be seen, visual, to be heard, audible, and to be understood, kinesthetic, right? I've got to think about it that way. Which means to be seen, I've got to give a little bit of a descriptor. I've got to make sure that you can picture it and start to create it in your head. To be heard, that means that I have to give them a voice, and that's dialogue. That's actually going to be the next tool that I talk about. To be understood talks about their past. If you don't know where they've been, you don't care where they're going, and so I have to give you relevant information. If I'm going to give you a client story, I've got to give you a little bit of their past background in a relatable way to see, okay, yeah, I'm in a similar position to this person, or I can see where they're coming from. Otherwise, I can't really connect with them. So you want to make your characters come alive in a deeper way. The second tool is dialogue. Dialogue is amazing. Mark Twain said, "Don't tell me that the ladies scream, bring her on stage and let her scream." Okay, I want you to think about when we give voice to the characters, it is powerful. It is more effective for you to hear today Stephen Covey give that advice than if I were to just reiterate that advice, isn't it? And what most people don't do is they don't use dialogue in stories. We mostly tell stories in narration, which means it's kind of like a book report. It's like an outsider looking in. But when we use dialogue, it puts you in present tense and it makes it real. It makes the character come alive and makes the story real. I'll give you an example. I don't mean to make light of this subject at all, but it's a very good way to demonstrate this. I'm going to tell you two stories, the same story, but one I'm going to tell you in narration, and two, I'm going to tell you with dialogue. And again, I'm not making light of the subject, but it helps you to see what I'm talking about. If I were to tell you the story in narration, it would sound like this. You know, a friend of mine was just diagnosed with cancer. And that might be emotionally connecting. But if I were to use dialogue, I'd say, a friend called me yesterday and said, "Ty, I have cancer. I don't know what to do. I'm just lost." Do you see the difference between the two? That dialogue allows me to personify the character. It allows me to change tonation, change posture, change facial expressions, to add personality. It changes it. Now, we can't tell a story all in dialogue. That would be a play, and that would be awkward. If you want to try that, I would love for you to film it and send me a copy of you doing that in front of a client, though. That would be cool. But narration is really boring. So what is narration used for? Narration brings it all together. It's like the narrator saying this is where they are, and it just pieces it all together. Dialogue is used for impact and humor. Go watch comedians for a little bit. Every joke they tell is in dialogue. And they typically do what's called an act out in comedy, where they literally just act out the situation. They personify it, and they start to put it into their own words and live it, right? Impact and humor, use dialogue. Dialogue is so powerful if you start to add it in. So instead of you just saying, "And now this is where my client is," give your client a voice. Let them say, "The best thing," and this is what they told me the other day, "the best part of our retirement is this," or whatever the situation may be, right? Give your client a voice and allow them to be heard. Okay, the third tool is details. Details are important. Now, I realize I said just a little bit ago that if it's not necessary to say, it becomes necessary not to say. So details would seem to fly in the face of that, right? Well, unnecessary, unusable, stupid, not needed details, get rid of those. But details that make it tangible, that make it real. When you're talking about location, amount, time, anything that makes it so that it crystallizes it, use details. Details make it more credible, they make it more real. I'll give you an example. I mentioned the Mel Fisher story before. When I tell that story, when he discovers the treasure of the Atocha, this is how I actually tell the story. I say, "One day, a magnometer indicated something down on the seabed. And so two divers dove down to see what they found. And they found they were sitting on an entire reef of silver bars. They found the mother lode. All in all, they found 700 silver bars that weighed 70 pounds apiece. They found 900 bars of gold. They found 2,500 emeralds, 3,500 other gems. They found hundreds of other artifacts and hundreds of pounds of heavy gold bars, discs, bits, and heavy gold chain. Estimates put the wrecks valued over $400 million. Or I could say they found a really big treasure. See how details make a difference, right? They make it real, like you can grab onto it, and it's tangible. So where it can make it come alive, and we think about how they sell weight loss products, right? They're not like, that guy lost a lot of weight. Like, that guy lost 50 pounds in the last 4 days. Like, it was amazing, you know? They put a timeline to it, and when it comes to amount, time, location, use actual details because they make it more dynamic. Now, the fourth tool that I'll mention is metaphors. Metaphors are amazing. Metaphors, when I say metaphors, I'm not differentiating similes, object lessons, just a comparison, right? A metaphor compares the known to the unknown. And a metaphor-based story can be so powerful as a teaching tool to simplify. You mentioned simplification and what stories do. Simplifying a story, making it so that people can understand. You explain a lot of big concepts. There are products and services that you guys offer that most people they can't wrap their head around. So how do you simplify it? Use a metaphor to compare something that they understand to something that you're trying to explain. That story that I used earlier with John as the example, that was a metaphor-based story. I was comparing Bill Gates, the known entrepreneur, to Ty Bennett, the unknown entrepreneur. And I actually took the words that those five people told me. They said, young, naive entrepreneur. I took their exact words and put them into the story. As I described Bill Gates, I said, who is this young, naive entrepreneur? No idea what he's talking about, right? Those were the same words they used to describe me. And what was I trying to do? I was trying to say, look, make this comparison, make this leap with me. Let Bill Gates lend me a little bit of credibility, right? That metaphor worked. And so if you can find the right metaphors to explain the products and the services, what you do, metaphor-based stories are amazing. They just make it more memorable. People can grab onto it. People can understand it. So we've walked through the mindset, the approach. We've walked through the skill set, how you craft a story. We've walked through the tool set, a lot of tools that make a story come alive. After this, at the first break, if you're interested, I'll be up in the exhibit area, next room over. I've got a copy of my books here, The Power of Storytelling, what we talked about, The Power of Influence, and a new book called The Two Most Important Days of Your Life. If you want to come get a copy, I'd love to sign it for you. I don't mean to brag, but my signature goes for like 13 cents on eBay, so, you know, you may want to. Just as an investment, mostly in your future, you know, maybe your kids. So I want to share one last story with you, and then I'm done. Before I jump into the story, I want you to pay attention to all of the tools that I just taught you. This was like a magician pulling back the curtain. You're going to see exactly how I use those same things. You're going to hear me say, imagine, and put you in the scene of the story. You're going to hear times that I reinforce relatability by saying, wow, could you imagine, right? I'm going to use all of the tools that we just talked about to share this story with you. Stories of a man named Michael Downing. At the end of World War II, Michael Downing was invited to go over to Germany to speak to a group of wounded soldiers. Imagine walking into a room where you see dozens of young men lying on cots. Some of them have been shot, some of them are amputees. Every one of them had lost hope in their eyes. Michael was actually really emotional about it. He was really moved, and he kind of stood back and was trying to gain his composure. And when he was introduced to speak, he stood up in front of them, and he started his speech by saying this. He said, I want you to know that anything is possible. I hope that you dream big dreams because you have a bright future ahead of you and the potential to achieve anything that you desire. Well, the soldiers weren't in very good spirits, and they started to boo him. And the booing got so severe that Michael finally stopped, and he grabbed a chair, and he sat down. And then unexpectedly, he reached down and he removed his prosthetic right leg, and he put it on the floor. And then he removed his prosthetic left leg, and he put it on the floor. Then he removed his prosthetic right arm, and he took off his prosthetic left hand. You see, what the soldiers didn't know about Michael was that when he was 14 years old, he was riding on the back of a wagon in a snowstorm. Somehow I fell off the wagon. By the time his parents realized he was missing and came back to get him, he had severe frostbite to the point that they'd amputate both of his legs, his right arm at the shoulder and his left hand at the wrist. Could you imagine what that would do to a 14-year-old kid? He empathized with those soldiers because he knew exactly what they were going through. He had lost all hope in his eyes too. But somehow with an amazing attitude and the help of prosthetic limbs, he went on to lead an incredible life. Graduated from college, he was married, he had 5 kids, and he climbed the corporate ladder until he became the president of a successful bank in Michigan. Now sitting there, quite literally a stump of a man, he started his speech over again by saying the exact same thing. He said, "I want you to know that anything is possible. I hope that you dream big dreams because you have a bright future ahead of you and the potential to achieve anything that you desire." To me, that's got to be the greatest speech that's ever been given. And his message is what I want to leave you with this morning. Anything is possible. I hope that each of you leave here with a new desire, a new excitement to go out and truly make an impact in people's lives. That's what you do. You have a chance to truly serve people, to help people, to change people's lives. It's incredible. I hope you see that potential, and I hope you live up to it. Thank you so much for having me.